from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 9, Brahma's Prayers for Creative Energy, text number 4. Na do not. Ataha param hereafter. Parama, O Supreme, yat that which bhavata of your lordship. Sarupam eternal form. Anandamatram impersonal Brahman effulgence. Avikalpam, without changes. Avidavarchita, without deterioration of potency. Prasamhi, do I see. Visvasiddham, creator of the cosmic manifestation. Ekam, one without a second. Avishvam, and yet not of matter. Atman, O Supreme Cause. Bhuta, body. Indriya, senses. Atmaka, on such identification. Madaha, pride. Te, unto you. Upashita, surrendered. Ajni, I am. O my Lord, I do not see a form superior to your present form of eternal bliss and knowledge. In your impersonal Brahman effulgence in the spiritual sky, there is no occasional change and no deterioration of internal potency. I surrender unto you because, whereas I am proud of my material body and senses, your lordship is the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and yet you are untouched by matter. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text 55, Bhaktyanam Abhijanati, Ivanyas Chasmi Tatvadaha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead can only be partially known and only by the process of devotional service to the Lord. Lord Brahma became aware that the Supreme Lord Krishna has many, many eternal, blissful forms of knowledge. He has described such expansions of the Supreme Lord Govinda in his Brahma Samhita 5.33 as follows. Advaitam achutim anarim anantarupam ajyan purana purusham navayovanam cha vedesu dulabam dulabam atma bhakto govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is non-dual and infallible. He is the original cause of all causes, even though he expands in many, many forms. Although he is the oldest personality, he is ever youthful, unaffected by old age. The Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be known by the academic wisdom of the Vedas. One has to approach the devotee of the Lord to understand him. The only way to understand the Lord as he is by devotional service to the Lord, or by approaching the devotee of the Lord who always has the Lord in his heart. By devotional perfection, one can understand that the impersonal Brahma Jyoti is only a partial representation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Krishna, and that the three Purusha expansions in the material creation are his plenary portions. In the spiritual sky of the Brahma Jyoti, there is no change of various kalpas or millenniums, and there are no creative activities in the Vaikuntha worlds. The influence of time is conspicuous by its absence. The rays of the transcendental body of the Lord, the unlimited Brahma Jyoti, are undeterred by the influence of material energy. In the material world also, the initial creator is the Lord himself. He brings about the creation of Brahma, who becomes the subsequent creator, empowered by the Lord. So I'll just read the verse again. O my Lord, I do not see a form superior to your present form of eternal bliss and knowledge. In your impersonal Brahman effulgence in the spiritual sky, there is no occasional change and no deterioration of internal potency. I surrender unto you because whereas I am proud of my material body and senses, your lordship is the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and yet you are untouched by matter. So, so much information here about the Vishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. This verse here is discussing at the beginning of Brahma's day, the beginning of creation. Even the Garbhadakshaya Vishnu had brought forth even Brahma, and the subtle form of the universe, and there in the form of a lotus, and there Brahma was also manifest by the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lord Brahma, after long meditation, has perceived by the grace of the Lord Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the very source of his creation, and he's describing, he's offering prayers to that Lord, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So much information here that would take a huge, many years really to properly try to focus on this information, even in this one verse. There's so many verses, one after another. Even this verse here, you really have to focus for many, many years. It describes in the Bhagavad Gita that in the fourth chapter, one who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge. So, not dedicated to financial progress, building up the bank balance. They're not dedicated to getting the latest car, getting the latest iPhone, not dedicated to, expanding the family. They're dedicated, the main purpose in life is to enter into the spiritual understanding, dedicated. One who is dedicated to such transcendental knowledge, not just, transcendental knowledge comes by way of, yes, I happen to be in the lounge room at the same time my kids were watching the cartoons of the Puranas, and I heard them say this. Not that sort of dedication, but properly dedicated. Such a person who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and controls the mind and senses, that person, in due course of time, they attain the fruits of that transcendental knowledge which they attain. prescribed in the Bhagavad Gita. But in that verse, of course, Krishna is describing, one has to, the mind and senses have to be controlled. That's actually part of the process of gaining transcendental knowledge. If our, generally, as described in this verse, I surrender unto you, whereas I am proud of my material body and senses. So, you know, Lord Brahma is describing that, you know, that obstacle generally prevents us from entering in to the understanding of Krishna or transcendence, transcendental knowledge. Now, this verse here, it's describing so many aspects of how the personal form of the expansion of Narayan, known as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, Narayan being the expansion of Krishna, how that personal form is superior to the Brahma Jyoti. It's very, you know, big topic. Now, if our mind and senses are uncontrolled, so while you know, while we're trying to fathom that and discuss that, and then if the mind wanders off, sometimes, you know, as a speaker, you can see you're giving class, and you consider, you know, some people just get straight and just fall asleep. But then sometimes you see others, their eyes are sort of going up. You know, it's like a daydream. You can tell when people are daydreaming. You see it in children, you know. You sort of, you're speaking to children. While you're speaking to them, their eyes are going like that, and you think, no. You know, look at me, look at me, look at me. Because, you know, they sort of, the mind just drifts off somewhere else. And actually, in Kali Yuga, you know, our attention span, especially for spiritual subject matters, is very, very short. When it comes to spiritual matters, you know, you can ask someone, you know, how many test runs did such and such a cricketer, you know, score in the you know, match against Australia and India 5 years ago, they'll tell you. How many innings, how many balls, how many, like this, they'll tell you. You ask someone, what verse did they speak yesterday in the Srimad Bhagavatam to someone who was sitting there? Or even at lunchtime, just after lunch. No, it's gone. It's gone. You know, our attention span in Kali Yuga, very, very short, very short. And our interest is even less, so it's not a good combination. But so at that rate, you know, it could take a couple of million years to, you know, enter into one verse. But, you know, so therefore in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, one who's dedicated to transcendental knowledge. You know, dedicated means they mold their entire life in such a way that my life, my whole life, everything from my work, my family, the way I control my mind and senses, my finances, everything I do is dedicated that I've got as much time as I possibly can to enter into this spiritual topic and understand fully, completely, and become, in this lifetime, fully spiritually self-realized and fully God-conscious at that. Now that's it. That person can enter into it. That person is a devotee of the Lord. Devotee, they're a bhakta. See, they're dedicated or devoted. That's where their dedication or their devotion. Therefore, if you want to understand transcendence, you go to that person who's devoted to that. That knowledge If you go to someone who's devoted to the cricket, and yes, and you say, you know, sometimes I always ask people, you know, do you read the Gita? I asked someone yesterday, and they were doing a little ceremony, and I always ask them, you know, do you read the Gita? No, you know, no one wants to say no, you know, like that's the Bible, that's the Indian Bible. I've never, to tell you the truth, I never look at it. No one wants to say, oh, yeah, bit, 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 bit. And so, or they say that, you know, well, at least someone in the family does. Oh, you know, my mum does. My mum's taught me like that. So, you know, I said to him, so your mum's taught you Bhagavad Gita. What is the main thing or the best thing that you have ever, your mum has taught you about the Bhagavad Gita? And he's like, oh, you know, it's like he's on the spot and his wife's starting to sweat because she knows that he, you know, he hasn't really. And, you know, he couldn't give an answer. He couldn't say, he didn't have half a sentence. He didn't have a quarter of a sentence. He didn't have an eighth of a sentence. He didn't have, there was nothing. So, I mean, you know, he's about nearly 30 years old. His mum's been teaching Bhagavad Gita all his life. What is the best thing your mother has taught you about Bhagavad Gita? And not one word can come out. People will say, yes, oh, I'm a great bhakta of Krishna. Bhagavad Gita, yes, that is it. Some of the different houses I go to where people read the Satyanarayana Puja, which is very popular, which is, you know, it's a prayer that they do, and generally there's a fear that if I don't do this prayer, I'll lose my wealth. And something bad will happen to my family, you know. And, you know, it's a prayer that maintains our, you know, the things that we're really devoted to, our material position, basically. But in there, you know, it describes that, because what happens is that sometimes these, because a lot of people don't know, even within the Hindu community, they don't actually know what the prayers are. So someone will, you know, they've got a copy of the Purana somewhere, where it comes from the Bhavishya Purana by Siddhi Goswami. I mean, they'll get that and they'll translate it for their guests who come, and they'll pass out some little pamphlets. But when they translate it, they put their interpretation of it. So they use the word bhakti. Right? So bhakti means it is, in its proper sense, it is pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead without any trace of any personal gain or motivation. And that is bhakti. When it's used, when you see it in these pamphlets, they use bhakti in this sense, that one person was, he walked past, this is part of the story, he walked past someone and he saw that he was worshipping the Lord with great bhakti, praying to the Lord, you know, to maintain his wealth and his family, like that. So in the same sentence, as Lord, give me this, I'm praying for this, like that, you know, you look after all my material interests, I'm not really offering to do anything for you, you know, but in that sense they use bhakti. So therefore, if you say, you know, here it says you approach a bhakta, they say, yes, I'm a bhakta. Because usually when they use the word bhakti, it's in the sense that I've never seen someone praying so much, you know, such fervor, such deep, you know, intensity, absorbed. But what is that prayer? Please, dear Lord, please maintain my wealth. Maintain my family. I want my sons and daughters to get a good education. Please. You know, I need a better job. That is bhakti, see? But here, and according to the Gita, actually it's a whole different connotation. Bhakti actually means a person who's actually, they're devoted solely, exclusively to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they're always trying to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead and how to form a yoga. Yoga means your connection with the Supreme. They want to be a true bhakta. They always want to be properly connected with the Supreme. Connection with the Supreme means that whenever one looks somewhere, they see that everywhere is Krishna. That my home, that is Krishna's property. My body, that is, the body is made of Krishna's material energy. That is Krishna's energy. So when they see the material body, they see that is Krishna's energy, and there's a spirit soul in that body, that is Krishna's spiritual energy. And Vishnu, who is the super soul, he is situated within the body, that is the expansion of Krishna. When I look at any living entity, I just see Krishna, the manifestation of his various energies. It reminds me of Krishna, that supreme person. And when we think of Krishna, we think, oh, you know, Krishna with his beautiful peacock feather and he's with Radharani like that, and he plays his flute. So wherever they look, they see Krishna's, everything reminds them of Krishna, and that reminds them of the beautiful form of Krishna within everything. And they also see that Krishna is within everyone, expanded as the super soul, and also within everyone, because everyone is a manifestation, everything is a manifestation of Krishna's energies. That is yoga, means that there's a connection. Anything you look at, there's a connection with the Supreme. When we see that, I look at my home as my property, then the connection with Krishna is broken, because we're thinking, or when we look at things as, you know, in a mood of enjoyment. So we see something and we think, here's that beautiful man, here's that beautiful woman, you know, how I could enjoy like that. Then immediately that connection is broken. Because the person, just like when we do a wedding, one of the last verses we say, to the groom, is that always remember that actually your bride belongs to God. That's one of the verses. So in other words, but if the husband sees the wife, the partner, as an object for one's bodily sense gratification, then immediately one forgets that principle. You know, how can I take what belongs to God and just forget him and utilize this or that or whatever for my own, you know? So that connection, that yoga, is as soon as there's sense gratification, the mind is just thinking of sense pleasure, immediately the yoga or the connection is broken. But yoga actually means that connection with the Supreme Person of Godhead, that is there within everything. That dedication, that person who is always trying to be constantly linked in yoga with the Supreme Personality of Godhead favorably, and one's life is molded in such a way as to always be absorbed in that samadhi, that meditation on transcendental knowledge, and reciprocating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The proof that one is in connection with the Supreme Lord is that there's a reciprocation. Just like when one enters a temple, one bows one's head. someone comes into the temple, they understand, I'm coming into the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which is his place of worship. I touch my head to the ground. Not that, I walk into the temple. Yes, there are so many people here. I wonder who's noticed me. You know, but have they noticed? You know, I've got the latest jacket. I've got the latest, accessories and what have you like that. But I have a quick glance around the room. Does anyone notice I've come in? No, that. You know, but so, sometimes people want. We want, you know, because we all have this sort of tendency. We all have it, you know, to some degree or another. We want everyone to see the service we're doing. So we're serving Krishna, but that, you know, we want everyone to admire us for being a great devotee of the Lord. Like that. I remember, the other day we were doing a wedding, and it was 12 o'clock, 12:30, and kirtan was going on, actually. So some of the usual guests come up the back. They saw there was a wedding. So we were down the front here and doing the seven circles. And there's seven circles there. And the bride was... I just announced everyone that the bride was just about to walk through. And I was sort of literally walking down towards this way, the centre. And... one man came in and just sort of placed himself right there, feet towards all the guests, sort of just put his head there. And I sort of tapped him and said, you know, we're doing a wedding here. You might have to, could you just come to the side a bit? And he wouldn't do it. So he was determined that, his prayer was more important than anyone and anything that was going on in that room. Not the humble mood. Here, Lord Brahma is describing, this, I am proud of my material body and senses. Even sometimes when we worship the Lord, that pride is still there. We want... to be known as the best devotee. My service is more important than yours. I have this, important service. one way you can really test that who has a sense of importance when you're walking through a doorway. So like this door here, if you ever want to test who thinks someone's more important than the other, so often you'll see that two devotees are coming at the entrance of the door at the same time. And it's very interesting to see who stops for the other person. I quite often, even if I'm carrying things, I get a bit of a shoulder as I'm going through the door, through someone. But, you can, actually in one of the scriptures, it describes that there's a whole list. If you're coming through the doorway and a Brahmin is coming through, so and then the non-Brahmin or Brahmini, is that Brahmini or a Brahmin, coming through the doorway and a non-Brahmin, generally they'll give way to the Brahmana. Or if you come into the doorway and one person is very elderly or, like sometimes you see like Mahatma's wife, you sort of, you don't know, she always looks like she's about to fall over, you sort of always feel like you want to grab her and, make sure she doesn't fall. So if she's coming through the door, you give way to the elderly, the frail, pregnant women, someone carrying a load like that. But people don't do that. If you watch that, they don't do that at all. It doesn't matter, someone's elderly, frail, Brahmin, carrying a load, I'm going through that doorway because I've got this service to do. And it's really important. And it's more important than anyone else. So that pride is there. So this that there's a disconnection with what to speak of God. We, even when we're literally with a person in front of us, see, God's very subtle. Krishna is very subtle in one sense, you know. But even when there's a person directly in front of one, there's an impersonal relationship. It's almost like they don't exist, right? Two people coming through the door. I didn't see anyone. Just bowled them over. Bang, you know. I'm coming through. I didn't notice that that person was old. I didn't notice they were juggling two or three plates of prasadam and a kid was tagging along behind and I bowled the prasadam out of the hand. Didn't notice. You know, just, I was in, absorbed in my service like that. Or, you know, I was late for prasadam. That's usually the best excuse, you know. I'm late for prasadam, you know, I'm in a hurry. I don't care who's coming through that doorway, I'm not getting last in the queue, you know, like that. So, you know, there's a person, you know, people have 20/20 vision and they just don't see that person, just like they block them out. You don't. What to speak of Krishna, who's spiritual, you know? So, therefore, you know, I like to remind devotees, because I see it a lot, that devotees shouldn't sit with their back towards Srila Prabhupada. They shouldn't sit with their backs towards the deities. Yeah, a little side on sometimes, you know, and some devotees, you know, there's little concessions. Some devotees are elderly. You know, they may have arthritis, all sorts of things. And, you know, they may not be able to sit on the floor for a long time. They may sit on the steps and the sideways. That's a different thing. You know, but, you know, directly with the back towards the guru or the deities, you know, is not proper. And so that a devotee is one who's always reciprocating with the Supreme Lord, that at every moment their activities is that they can perceive the Lord's presence. They're so absorbed in transcendental vision. Transcendental knowledge doesn't mean, yes, I studied this and I can remember so many facts and figures about God. There's 10 main incarnations and, you know, so many yugas and things like that. Transcendental knowledge means you can see that God is standing right there. And He is present. And I was doing a housewarming yesterday and it's very unusual. All the men stayed outside, you know, it was an Indian community. And some devotees had gone there to help to make sure they cook some, so the devotees cooked some meals. And the, you know, the people who owned the house, just bought the house, were sort of new in one sense, you know, that the didn't know a lot about Krishna consciousness, but they were friends of, you know, good quality devotees. But when I did the program, all the men stayed outside when we were doing it. You know, they didn't come in for the kirtan, they didn't come in for the jagat. You know, they just had a chat outside. The ladies were there in the program, all the ladies sat there. But, you know, a lot of them were, they were having a chat with each other, you know, about this and that and the other, you know. And some were looking at their phone. They're all distracted. Different. It was very distracting to me. I was trying to just give a little introduction to, we're going to worship the Lord. And I gave this example. I read a verse, how Krishna is the supreme friend. And I explained that, you know, when we do a housewarming, in effect, if the person goes to, does a huge amount of work to create that home and purchase that home, in effect, what they've accumulated is a debt. Now, apart from the $500,000 they own the bank, to the bank, there are many, many hundreds of lifetimes that they have to live out in the material world to, you know, as a debt for the work that they've done to create the home, even though they're doing their duty. There's good karma, there's bad karma. Even if you do, if you provide a nice home for your wife and children, then you get the good karma that you have to take birth again, and then you get, you know, similar benefits because of what you've done. Then those benefits are also awarded. You get nice parents and they provide you with a home, you get nice like that. So you have to live that karma. But, you know, of course, for all the living entities, it may be disturbed. You know, for all the financial transactions where it may have, some of that money may have been, we're utilizing money that's come from sinful activities for our own purposes, or we may be doing some work that we don't even realize how it's, you know, causing karma and difficulty somewhere, you know, in the world at that. And just like, you know, just we buy clothes, and in Australia we buy very cheap clothes. It means that there's someone overseas in some sweatshop, as they call them, you know, working for, you know, 2 rupees a month so that we can have, you know, some very, very cheap clothing. So someone is really suffering like that. So there's a huge amount of karma. But when you perform yajna, the Supreme Personality of God, he comes as a friend. He says, you know, as the Supreme Personality of God, we offer a few fruits, a little bit of ghee, a few mantras, and for that, he says, your debt's gone. All those hundreds of lifetimes that you would have to live out, that's gone. And I said to them, you imagine the bank manager coming in to your home. He says, oh, I heard you having a little housewarming, I've come over. Because I'm your friend, that $500,000 you owe the bank, consider that debt gone. It's gone. Nice jagya, nice ceremony. But, and I said to them, so imagine the bank manager comes in, that's what he's going to do, and he comes in, he sits down, and we're on our iPhone. Excuse me, I'll just come to the table. Yeah, I'll be with you in a minute. You know, like have a little chat with, you know, the one next door. You know, excuse me, I just want, yeah, I'll be with you in a minute. You know, or don't even come in and see him, just, you know, hang around outside and don't even bother to come and see him like that. The bank manager would be thinking, it's like I don't exist. It's like I'm not any. I've come to wipe out the debt. You know, they're not really giving me anything. There's nothing there for me. And they're just ignoring me. And then, but, you know, a devotee, they perceive the presence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They understand. Oh, we're about to worship the Lord. He is present, full attention. You know, the mind is not diverted, not even for a fraction of a moment. You know, there is a connection, a link, a yoga, like that. That person, therefore there's that verse, Om Tad Vishnu Padamam Padam, which is chanted at the beginning of every initiation, every Vedic ceremony. Om Tad Vishnu Padamam Padam Sada Pajanti Suryo Dviva Chakshu Ruditam Tarupa Sol Panyo Jagram Sasam Indite Yat Padamam Padam. Which means that just as, you know, persons in this material world, you know, can perceive the sun, and then by the rays of the sun, they can show, you know, they say to the children, look, there is the sun. So the sun is giving its light and helping us to see it. And we look up at the sun, and say to the child, look at the sun, you know, look at the sunset. The sun is coming up. It's the sun that makes the daytime. So you point, you can, using the sun itself to show, so the sun is helping you to see, and then we're revealing that to others. Like that. So in the same way, a devotee, they perceive the spiritual world in the same way. That the Lord is revealing himself to the devotee at every moment, and the devotee is saying, just see, God is here, like that. That is what it means. Now, if you go to the owl, the sun comes up and the owl's like, eyes shut, I'm not looking. I'm not looking. I said, tell me about the sun. You're not going to get, you know, much. So that person who, you know, their interest in the Gita, their interest in the Srimad Bhagavatam, their interest in transcendental knowledge, their eyes are always closed to that. Unless, you know, there's some fleeting, you know, little flutter of the eyes and then eyes shut again. If you go to that person and ask them about transcendental subject matters, what will you get? So therefore it says here that you go to a devotee. When, but not in the sense of, yes, I'm a bhakta of Krishna, but I couldn't tell you anything after 30 years of, you know, I couldn't tell you anything about the Bhagavad Gita, I couldn't tell you, you know, I don't even know how many chapters in there, or who wrote it, you know, I know Krishna spoke it, who actually wrote it, or you know, being devoted to so many things, or, you know, not being able to perceive the presence of the Lord, even when he's present in a ceremony of worship. But, so not that type of bhakta. Not that type of bhakta. But the bhakta who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge, to Krishna consciousness. Their whole life is dedicated. You approach that person and you will understand transcendental knowledge. And otherwise not. So it's not, here, Srimad Bhagavatam is not saying, you know, there's a club, there's an exclusive club, and those in that club, you know, they have the secret, and you've got to be in the club, you know, to sort of get the secret, you know. You in the club, you got the special ring, you got the special handshake, no, you're not coming in like that. You know, this is a club for the rich, you know, you got to have a certain amount of money, you got to have a certain amount of position and influence, they're in that club. It's not saying, anyone can be a devotee, anyone. From anywhere in the world, you can be a Malechi, you know, by birth, you can be Sudra, you can be born in India, you can be born in China, you can be born in Australia, even in Melbourne, and you can be a devotee. It's not an exclusive club, but it's the qualification of that person actually has transcendental knowledge because they've dedicated their entire life to attaining that. And in order to do that, they've kept their mind and senses controlled and they're always reciprocating with the Supreme Lord in samadhi. You go to that person, he'll tell you, she will tell you about spiritual subject matters. So it's not like, it's not a, you know, a position of pride. Here, Lord Brahma is saying, in fact, it's the opposite that, Jesus said, that the meek and humble shall inherit the kingdom of God. So this is the same prayer as Lord Brahma. It's the same teaching as Christianity. And meek and humble means, you know, we're not proud of the body, we're embarrassed with it. You know, the devotee's concept of the body is that, you know, I can't believe, you know, I look in the mirror, here I am in the material world, this body is just tantamount proof that I left the spiritual world. I turned my back on Krishna and I came here to enjoy like some imitation God. And every time I look in the mirror, that's staring me in the face. So a devotee is thinking, I'm so embarrassed to be walking around, you know, with this body. And that, you know, it's just a statement of what have I done. You know, it's like, you know, if you're in prison and you have the prison clothes and the shackles and you know, your mum comes to visit you and you think, oh, God, I can't face my mother. Here I am in prison clothes. Disgrace my family, disgrace my mother, you know that. So devotees are not proud of the body, they're embarrassed. You know. It's a constant reminder, you know. I gave up my pure love for Krishna to come here for some gross sense gratification. What sort of a friend am I? You know, what sort of a You know, and how unchaste, how, you know, like that. So a devotee, those persons who, you know, not the proud, you know, you approach a devotee for transcendental knowledge, it's not because they're a proud bunch of elitists, it's because they understand, you know, that I shouldn't be here in this material world, and they're dedicating themselves to, once again, you know, purifying the heart and going back to the spiritual world. For those persons, you approach them and you can ask a question, and I'll probably, as many questions as you can ask such a devotee, they will answer one after another. Years, you can keep asking them questions for years and years. They're like a waterfall of knowledge. But if someone is a rascal, then that waterfall sometimes stops. It's just going, then they may stop speaking. Anyway, so here, Lord Brahma, he is one such devotee. In fact, he's the head of the whole universe. You know, he's the first created being, and he is managing the whole universe above all the demigods. Above, you imagine that position. You know, he's bigger than Obama. He's bigger than, you know, Indra. All the demigods put together, he is, they all worship, you know, he is more mighty, powerful, important. And he has this humble mood, you know, that I am proud. I am proud of my material body and senses. So we approach such devotees, and Lord Brahma is one such devotee, and he, Krishna, such a nice devotee that Krishna himself personally revealed himself to Lord Brahma. What happened was that Krishna played his flute, and when Brahma heard, so Brahma meditated. In his meditation, Lord Narayan revealed himself to Brahma and revealed to him the Vaikuntha Lokas. But Krishna then also played his flute and revealed himself to Lord Brahma. And when the sound of Krishna's flute entered Brahma's ears, that transcendental sound entered as the Om. And when it came from his mouth, it came as the Gopala mantra, which expands the Karma Bija, you know, Gayatri mantra, the Gayatri mantra, the Vaishnava Gayatri mantra, like that. And the Gayatri, the Gayatri, so you have the Brahma Gayatri, you have the Gopala mantra, the Karma Bija, so one expands from the other. And all the Vedas expand from Gayatri. All the Vedas are considered, that's why Gayatri mantra is so important, because all the Vedas are considered to be an expansion of that sound vibration of the Gayatri mantra. But the, you know, the Gayatri mantra expands as, you know, itself, as other Gayatri mantras, the Vaishnava. So Lord Brahma, Krishna revealed himself to Brahma and initiated Brahma. Therefore he became twice born spiritually by being initiated personally by Krishna with the Gayatri mantra. And after that, then he expounded all the Vedas, and he offered these prayers, Advaita Machuta Manadam Ananta Rupam Ajam Parana Purusham Naviyo Namcha Videsha Dula Vamadula Vamatma Bhakto Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. And he describes there that Govinda, so, you know, Krishna, Govinda specifically, the primeval Lord, and this is the very origin You know, you go back to, you know, the very first from whom the other expansions of the Lord come, that is Govinda, who is non-dual, infallible. He's not part of the material world. He is the original cause of all causes, even though he expands in many, many forms. Ram, Narayan, Vishnu, and the Guna avatars, you know, Brahma, Shiva. Although he is the oldest personality, there is no one before Krishna. The oldest personality means that, you know, you can go before Vishnu expands from Narayan. So in that sense, Narayan is before, in that sense. Narayan expands from Krishna, although they're both eternal, but for the sake of pastimes, we can consider that Krishna is primeval, more primeval. So he is the oldest. So you go to the origin, and then when you get to Krishna, there's Krishna. There's no one is the cause of Krishna. Krishna is the cause of Narayan. Narayan is the cause of Vishnu. Vishnu is the cause of Gavarakshaya Vishnu. From them come Brahma, Shiva. But no one is the cause of Krishna. That is a statement. And, you won't find actually anywhere. So then he says, although he's the oldest, he's ever youthful because unaffected by old age, his body is completely transcendental, spiritual. The personality of Godhead cannot be known by the academic wisdom of the Vedas. So there it describes, even by studying the Vedas, he cannot be known. One has to approach the devotee of the Lord to understand him. One has to, and to be trained up. So what happens is that even when one hears from a devotee, then the devotee has to help a person to become purified so that what the devotee is speaking to them, they can assimilate. So, therefore, you know, for instance, a devotee would say, you're not that material body, you're a spirit soul. And, you know, for a lot of people, even though the knowledge is just given to them, they cannot understand that. You know, they may come to the temple and, you know, hear that from devotees a lot. You're not that body, you're a spirit soul. A person cannot understand it. It's not just an I've heard that, yes, I've locked it in. I can't understand that I'm not this body. You know, that there's, so one has to become purified. And that purification process, the devotee helps with that. So one approaches the devotee, one hears from the devotee, and one engages in bhakti. And that bhakti itself is a purification process which helps one to understand the transcendental knowledge which the devotee is speaking. So in other words, if one goes to the Vedas, even one, you know, reads the Bhagavad Gita and what have you, but without going through the devotee and without being engaged by a devotee in bhakti, still the understanding doesn't come. So this is the verse by Lord Brahma, very nicely describing here. And he's saying that form he is seeing as Gavadakshaya Vishnu, I do not see a form superior to your present form of eternal bliss and knowledge. Any questions? No, it's actually an impetus. Yeah, it's an impetus. You know, as long as one doesn't have that sense, it's an obstruction. You know, as long as we have that sense that, you know, here's this big wide world, and I'm so strong and beautiful and handsome and intelligent, I'm just going to enjoy so much in this world. Like, you know, like that sort of pride, you know. Like, I am so big and mighty and wonderful, you know, nothing's going to stop me. I'm just going to go out and enjoy this world like that. It's sort of a false sense of, you know, what we are. We're really just a tiny little speck, you know, just, you know, sometimes you see the little insects, you're reading the book and the little dot you think is a full stop and then it gets up and walks to the other end of the sentence. And you think, gee, you know, if I close the book now, it might have been on the side or something, you know, if I close the book, am I going to, you know, squash it? You see, their life is so precarious. You know, they're just oblivious. You know, when you see spiders, they'll set up a, you know, you leave the door open, you know, it's a hot day, so you leave the door open, the spider crawls in and thinks, oh, you know, in the door jamb, I think, I'm going to build a nice little web here. And you think, you know, you're really proud of your web, and, you know, yes, you're doing a wonderful job, but when I shut that door, you know, it's like... So our position is like that spider. We set up home in a door jamb somewhere in this world. You know, we're really tiny and frail, you know, compared to the forces. As Prabhupada said, you know, one wave can come through, you know, to Melbourne. He said, he talks about one wave can come through and just take out, you know, the whole of Melbourne. You know, and you see that, you know, people set up. What always fascinates me is, you know, people who live near volcanoes, you know, and the volcanoes, every, you know, 50 years or 100 years, the volcano comes up, destroys everyone in the village, except one or two people, you know, and then it dies down, they just build their houses there again. And, you know, that concept, now this time I'm going to be successful, you know, like I'm going to, you know, pray and be a religious person, this and that and the other, and, you know, I'm lucky. That's part of, sometimes the part of people's pride, you know. I was a very lucky person by nature, you know, good things happen to me. I'm a good person. Why shouldn't good things happen to me? Why should that volcano go? I'm a really good person. I'm, you know, very proud of it, you know. And you ask them, well, what have you actually done good? when we become proud like that, you know, we just really see ourselves as someone who's just going to get out there and control everything. We're going to manipulate this world around our little, you know, comfy zone. You know, there's planets going here and there and, you know, all sorts of forces, but we're going to manipulate it. And so we've got this nice, cozy little spot and we're just going to protect that. You know, it's a sort of a false sense of pride. But, you know, a devotee, they see at every step is danger. You know, like we're watching the, and Shrimati was telling that a devotee was doing kirtan, you know, who was it, Gaurav Govinda, who, you know, is giving class, and died. I could die right now.
It was in his room.
I could just, you know, die around. The other week, I was starting, you know, I think I was due to give class.
The other day, so
yeah.
On Harinam, there was a man who, I think he was traveling with Gurudev,
yeah.
Had a heart attack.
While he was doing kirtan, while he was leading kirtan. Yeah, that's right, yeah. And, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I was on my way to the temple, and I had a headache, and a couple of doctors had told me that, you know, a little murmur in the heart, so you can take a Dispan, you know, sort of good. I haven't had one since I was a teenager. Usually I have a really bad headache. I don't usually take anything, but I'll take a Panadol or something. So on my way out, I, you know, got this Dispan and took it and had this anaphylactic reaction, which... almost killed me, you know, just what I usually do, just on the way to class and on the way to the temple. I had this.
Actually, it was on Valentine's Day.
It was on Valentine's Day. Yeah, it was. Yeah. I'm waiting for next Valentine's Day to give her a present. We spent the day. It was beautiful. Yeah, we did. We spent the day in the hospital. We in both of the time. All day. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, my I didn't realise, but, you know, I knew I couldn't breathe. So I have this vaporizer with the Atomire.
Yeah.
And I put the mask on to, you know, because I sometimes get asthma and I was puffing away at the, you know, like that. And I was really struggling to breathe. It was getting worse and worse and worse, and my lips, you know, felt really tight. You know, I couldn't understand. And I said, Srimati says, I'll call an ambulance. And I'm saying, you know, don't. Like, you know, I'm on my way. I've got ceremonies, you know, the bookings and giving class, you know. So I'm saying, don't. So then I kept telling her, don't. And then she came in and she put a mirror in front of my face. And when I saw myself, I couldn't recognize myself. I said, you know, call that ambulance. You know, I was like, yeah. Yeah, it scared me. So, but, you know, just that could have been it. Huh? I mean, I had a lot of things at home while I was waiting for the ambulance. I had a lot of things, you know. Naturopath, but that could have been it. Just on your way to the temple bank, that's it, all finished, you know. Just like, you know, some devotees, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, you know, just in the car, gone, you know, within a second, you know. And so devotees, we have that sense, you know. The next step I take could be my last. This could be my last day. This could be my very last day. What am I going to do? If this is my last day, what am I going to do that? So a devotee has that sense. And so it's actually an impetus, you know, to serve, not an obstruction. Actually, without that sense of the nature of this world, it's, you know, if we have that sense that this world is a place of enjoyment, that's also, it's almost very difficult. It's very hard to actually become a devotee as long as we have that sense. That's why when Prabhupada used to speak, you know, he used to repeat that. And Krishna in the Gita, he just says straight out, you know, this world is a place of misery from the highest to lowest. He said, you know, everyone knows there's some enjoyment there. You know, devotees are not fools, that there's not, you know, enjoyment, some enjoyment in the world. But it's a devotee understands the nature of that enjoyment. You know, we want to enjoy as a spirit soul means that there's a verse again in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee does not engage in the senses and sense gratification knowing, you know, that such pleasures, you know, have an end and they're limited at that. So, you know... A devotee understands, you know, I would like to enjoy, but as Prabhupada gives the example, someone says, hey, Ganga, sit down, you know, you've done this nice program for us at home. Sit down there, there's some sweet rice, there's some halva, it's all been nicely offered. And once you start eating it, we're going to come up behind you and bash you on the head with a big 4B2. I don't know if I can enjoy that meal, you know, without hanging over my head. You know, you say, you're really going to just, you know, as I'm, you know, getting, you know, I might skip the meal. But, you know, if someone thought, that sweet rice looks great, you know, look at that halva. I'm just going to put that out of my mind. I'm not going to think about that. That person can enjoy. There's two types of people who enjoy. There's the fool. They know that I'm going to eat this sweet rice. And then, you know, someone's going to come and bash me on the head and that it'd be finished. Like that's a, yeah, the sweet rice. That fool, they're just oblivious, yeah? And that, Like the emu, you know, the ostrich. Lion roars, put their head in the sand. I'm fine. I'm having a great time. And the lion is thinking, this is the easiest catch I'm ever going to get. He's not even moving. He's not even, you know, it's like, you know, at the moment there's a trend in the city that when young girls walk around with their headphones on, enjoying, that men sneak up and attack them and drag them off and do terrible things, you know. You know, and it's that ostrich sense, you know, that I'm just really enjoying this world, you know. I'm oblivious to the dangers. So that person, that fool, that rascal, because Prabhupada, you know, a fool basically is a rascal. We don't sort of give him a lot of, you know, sympathy. To be a fool basically is the same as a rascal. Prabhupada isn't. And that person, the person who's absorbed in spiritual knowledge, they're absorbed that I am, you know, an eternal being and I've dedicated my life to returning to the spiritual abode. I'm situated within Brahman, the spiritual connection with the Supreme Lord in this lifetime, and I'm situated, therefore, whatever happens to the body, I'm disassociated with that. You know, it is not me. You know, this body will die, this body will be diseased, but it is not me. I am the soul within. And I have this very blissful relationship with the Supreme Lord who is so kind to me, even though I'm such a proud, foolish rascal. That person can enjoy it. It's the neophyte transcendentalist who suffers more than anyone. That person suffers. They have a little bit of knowledge on the spiritual path, they've got a little understanding of Gita, a little understanding of, but they're going to enjoy at the same time. You're going to mix a little bit of spirituality and a lot of enjoyment, mix that. That person suffers. Therefore, Prabhupada says, when you're chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the Sudanam, pure chanting, that devotee experiences the varieties of taste, rasa, in their loving relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhava Bhakta, or, you know, one who is not even necessarily the Bhava Bhakta, but one who's, you know, chanting is becoming very pure. It's not pure, but they're really trying to avoid the offences and chant nicely and follow different principles. They're liberated. So they're chanting Hare Krishna, they're actually liberated, and they're getting some rasa as well. Some little like that. The devotee who's chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and committing offences and remaining on the neophyte platform with a materialistic sort of mentality, they still suffer. They feel, even though they're chanting, they still suffer in the material world. They're chanting Hare Krishna, but they will still suffer because they remain, by and large, predominantly still on the material platform, even though they're following some spiritual life. And unfortunately, the majority of people who follow any spiritual path, so not just the devotees, but all sorts of spiritualists in this world, they're on that platform. There's a little bit of spirituality, but predominantly, I'm this material body enjoying, you know, in this world. They're all suffering. Like that. Any other questions? Yeah. Comes naturally. You put me on the hot seat. I think you put Chanchala Lakshmi on the hot seat. There it is, yeah. You got more front than Myers. I think we'll stick to the Bhagavad Tam. From what I understand, you two have a nice relationship, and it seems you have the blessings of your spiritual master to associate. But I mean, you know, generally it's good to get to know, couples. Just like, you know, we're talking here about being dedicated to transcendental knowledge. You know, you really sort of, the relationship with the Supreme develops in slow degrees. So, you know, the relationship that we have with people in this world is similar. You know, that we in slow degrees, we properly develop that relationship. And in fact, when we chant the mantras for a wedding, and in the Bhagavad Gita it describes that for the bride or bride to be, the husband is supposed to be they see that this person is capable, that the Lord, he represents Narayana or Krishna. The Lord will act through this person, and I will have a good life with that person. And the husband is looking at the partner and thinking, Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, who knows perfectly how to serve the Lord, she is acting through my wife. So therefore, quite often the husband will address the wife as Devi, literally the representative of Radharani, or the goddess of fortune. So, there's a spiritual aspect and a material aspect, and when one is satisfied that yes, I can perceive that I have faith in this person, I can perceive that this increase my relationship with Krishna through this person, I can increase my relationship with Krishna and his spiritual energy through this person. Now, the difficulty is, if we don't understand anything about Krishna and, his Shakti, then that becomes difficult, doesn't it? Because that's really the basis of a relationship, that, we're satisfied. I can perceive this, just like we're given Om Tad Vishnu Padamam Padam, that somehow in the presence of this person, all the spiritual truths become revealed to me like that. And at the same time, material, everything is also going on nicely, like the shadow, automatically. But if we don't know what the, God is, we don't know what, Krishna is, we don't properly know, about the Lord's spiritual energy, how can we perceive that in that person? So, our relationship generally should, properly, there should be a spirituality, and the material relationship should develop side by side. Prabhupada, if we're going to put a greater emphasis on something, it should be in the spiritual aspect of a person, their ability to, bring us to the spiritual platform. So the material aspect is there. Prabhupada never really did a lot of compatibility. He didn't do any of it, as far as I know, compatibilities and things like that. Two people, and he put them together and got them married. His understanding was, if you become nice devotees, then, you will have a nice marriage, because you'll both develop all good qualities and you'll perceive the presence of the Supreme Lord within each other, and your life will be so blissful because of that. See? Now, what happens is, if someone's spiritual life flounders, then there should be a compatibility materially, because that's going to get them through that difficult time. See? And that happens. We see a lot of devotees, sometimes their faith in spiritual life gets really shaky. And then if they've got no material compatibility, then how do they support themselves? That's when there's real trouble. But If things are going along nicely materially because there's a compatibility, they work well together, you know, then gradually their spiritual life will come back online. See? So therefore, we do the compatibilities as well. But if one is flourishing in their spiritual life, you know, it's not as important. You can even neglect it to some degree or another, and the spiritual master just puts it together. So therefore, really, you know, the relationship is based upon that spiritual, how you're making spiritual progress. So side by side. But if we don't not fixed up in perceiving the Supreme Personality of Godhead and understanding Him properly, how do we then see that Him in someone else? As I said, you know, I've given examples where you can be at a ceremony worshipping Krishna and people are oblivious to the fact, you know, people can come into the temple and stand with the back to Krishna. People can see, you know, a devotee, you know, even a senior devotee walking through the doorway and they're on the way to Prasad and they just don't even see them, they bump them out of the way even though they're carrying things. Right? And yet somehow or another, so, you know, it's not an easy thing. You know, it's not a light-hearted thing. You know, it's there has to be some dedication, you know, and taking things slowly, step by step, and transcendental knowledge develops, and also we're seeing if there's a proper material compatibility and what have you. So you can't really just, you know, give a answer like that. Yeah, you know, yes, you should marry her, you should marry her. You know, these things should be properly done step by step, following the prescribed methods, you know, both materially and spiritually, over the course of time, and it will naturally be revealed. You know, but yeah. And you know, you have to be a little careful that a devotee takes their, you know, or someone said we should get married, but you don't have that sense in yourselves. You know what I mean? That's a little dangerous. It's okay if the person who's suggesting you should marry is an extremely qualified person, has a huge, great track record with that sort of thing. Otherwise, oh, so-and-so says we should marry, therefore I will, even though I don't really know myself. That's not a good policy. You know, you should be very sure within yourself, and you should, you know, seek advice from persons who have a good track record with relationships. Both should be there. And it should be based upon your ability to perceive spiritual truths for each other, and there should be a material compatibility as well. So that takes time, cannot be answered. You know. So, but it's an important question because, as we said, a person who's dedicated to transcendental knowledge, they do mould their life in such a way, which includes marriage. You know, one of the biggest decisions we're going to make in our life is who we marry. And that is part, that is one of the biggest things you can do to mould your life successfully in such a way that you can dedicate your life to transcendental knowledge. So it's an important, it is related to the class, because we have been discussing moulding your life in a way such as you can dedicate yourself to transcendental knowledge, otherwise you won't get it. And that's one of the biggest decisions you'll ever make. So, you know, do it very carefully, do it properly, and you'll both be happy in this world and in the next. But it's not just a quick decision. You know, it's absorbing yourself properly, carefully, in that process. Any other questions? Yeah. Referring the so when you say is it referring to the spiritual master specifically, I assume you mean the Diksha Guru.
Yeah.
So the Prabhupada, the devotee, they are guru. Because to be a devotee means that that person, you know, woman or man, they have come to this, you know, they're beyond the brahmanas, even though they may not be brahminically initiated, they've gone beyond just understanding Brahman, they've gone beyond the yogis of the Paramatma. They're actually fixed up in understanding, you know, Bhagavan. Very, very rare. So, they've understood the purport of the Bhagavad Gita properly, which many yogis and jnanis and karmis don't. So, you know, ultimately they can teach the yogis, they can teach even the... So, they're the guru. And a Vaishnava, Vaishnavi means guru. Even a very neophyte devotee, but who has faith in Krishna, that person is the guru, even for those who are very transcendentally elevated, completely detached from the body, detached from the world, can do all sorts of, you know, wonderful yogic meditations and, you know, what have you. That neophyte devotee is their guru. And they have higher transcendental realization. In that sense, the Prabhupada is just—he's just saying the devotees, and you know, the GBC, of course, is you know, there's the disciples' course, and the disciples' course is the GBC wants to remove the misconception in ISKCON, which, you know, has been there, or, you know, there's misconception, it's just doing things in the wrong way or just following what everyone else does. The GBC wants to strengthen ISKCON. Our strength is that we have a variety of gurus. The Diksha Guru is always central. Whatever we learn from the various gurus who are, I mean, Vaishnavas, Vaishnavis, who are expert in their fields, you know, we bring to the guru. And we accept that portion that he allows us to. So, someone is teaching, you know, some teachings from the 10th canto, and we, you know, and we're listening to, hearing some commentaries by the various acharyas, and we're speaking with our guru. He says, you know, there's no need for you to get into all these commentaries. You know, have you read Prabhupada's books? Just read Prabhupada's books first, you know. So we accept that portion which the guru allows, the Diksha Guru. The Diksha Guru is central. But, you know, there is an interrelationship where the various Shiksha Gurus, they're honouring the role of the Diksha Guru in a disciple's life, but the Diksha Gurus are also honouring the role of the Shiksha Gurus, who are quite often, they're the ones doing the real training, you know, and giving the transcendental knowledge. And guiding them on a practical basis, year after year, day after day. So they're honouring each other. That's the proper system. And they're all Vaishnavas of different levels like that. So here Prabhupada is, you know, when he says devotee, for, you know, for what, in various capacities, you can go to a very neophyte devotee and they'll tell you, they can understand Krishna, they have faith. Krishna is the Supreme Person of Godhead. Not Narayan, he's not the original Krishna, not Vishnu. They have full faith, and they're just a neophyte devotee, but their faith is there. That person, you can go to them, and you know, they'll help you. But of course, the greater the surrender of a devotee to Krishna, or the means the more purification in their heart, the more Krishna is able to work through them. They're, you know, there's no obstructions. Sometimes with younger devotees, even Madhyamalikaris, there is a teaching, but it can get a little distorted because a devotee may have a particular... you know, they may be indifferent to that aspect of philosophy. It may not appeal to them because it's sort of, you know, it's a level of surrender that's not quite appealing. You know, it's like, you know, Prabhupada liked all his devotees to preach, the women, the men, and he didn't, you know, he, in the Bhagavatam we see that women have a certain role in the home, men have a certain role, and, but in Kali Yuga sometimes that has to be, you know, swapped over, but the roles are somehow there. But either way, he really wanted to be preaching. You know, every day we do something, we do our sadhana, and you know, we become fixed up and we're preaching. You know, so some devotees, that may not be very appealing to them. You know, they don't want to get out of the comfort, you know, that we can get into the sattva guna comfort zone of being a devotee. You know, life is good, you know, I'm comfortable, got a nice home, nice family, you know, children, nice job, you know, like, I'm really enjoying this situation, you know, as a devotee. You know, to get out and perform the austerities and preach, I like, I have to be away from home, I, you know, there's a little bit of, you know. So that aspect of the philosophy may not be appealing to them, so they may actually have a, they may, when they present it, you may not get the real picture of what Prabhupada wanted from that devotee. They don't even realise they're doing it, but they can downplay what Prabhupada may have said about that. Prabhupada also, you know, he considered that all services are absolute. So whether you're doing deity worship and you're in the mood of a preacher, or you're cooking but you're in the mood of a preacher, that's the same thing. If you're doing temple services and you've got a strong preaching attitude, that the work I'm doing is supporting the preaching, you know, you have a real, you know, somehow or another, I love to do this and that, but I cannot, so, but I'll support them whatever way I can, you know, if I have to drive the van for the devotees, whatever like that. That's the same thing. That's not less. So, if we get a devotee who's doing a lot of preaching and they are somewhat a little bit proud of the fact that they're a great preacher, they may have a slight condescending attitude of the devotees who may not be on the front line, yet they're actually just as great preachers by supporting that role. So you may not get the true picture from them. See, so, but the one who has no motivation and they're really, you know, they've spent their entire life really dedicated to understand what did Prabhupada want? What is his mood? What is his teachings? And they're just constantly absorbed in that and constantly hearing from, you know, and they really assimilated that over time. You know, you're likely, because they're so dedicated to that, they have no other motive. Literally, every breath they take is for that goal. Making sure that what Prabhupada wanted is implemented properly and devotees understand that. You approach that devotee, they're more of a, Krishna is working through them without any obstructions. So every devotee is a Vaishnava, but at the same time, the more someone is literally fixed up in pleasing Prabhupada and Krishna, that person is a, you know, better via media. So none of them are disregarded, but there's a practical sense. You know, it's interesting because there's a couple of aspects to that question. One is that sometimes a devotee, you know, we may not be the best devotee to do that particular service or preaching or what have you has to be done, but we may be the only one available. We may have so many disqualifications, but somehow or another, we're the only one available at that particular time. Krishna will allow us to do what a pure devotee does, despite our impediments. So Prabhupada, he'd say, we're not pure devotees. And, you know, he humbly included himself. We're not pure devotees. But because we are serving the pure devotee's instructions, we're as good as. So, you know, just like sometimes, even recently, but it happens, someone is about to deliver a baby. And the mother says, we're not going to make it to the hospital. Stop the car. We're going to deliver the baby right here on the side of the road. Now, that person is not qualified. You know, whoever's driving that car, they're not a doctor, they're not a midwife, they have no medical experience. But when they call Triple O and they get the instructions and they follow that, they're as good as a doctor. There's no difference. So that's one aspect to that question. And the other is that sometimes Krishna puts us in a situation where, we'd like to do a service in a particular way, or to help people to understand Krishna in a different way, or to preach in a certain way, and we're aware that we have a lot of different impediments and things in the heart and what have you. And Krishna generally reveals that, you know, through the interactions we have, you know. For instance, if we look at Srila Prabhupada, he sort of whizzed around the world, and just people, even the most, you know, fallen people, just become, you know, devotees. You know, we sometimes may speak to people for many years, and, you know, in the course of so many years, you know, we say, oh, I made a couple of devotees, that we can, you know, half a dozen people, you know, I made a devotee like that. You know, so we can perceive, you know, that I'd like to just speak, and, you know, the person becomes a devotee and they gradually, you know, make so much advancement, but it doesn't happen. So, therefore, Krishna helps us in that way. That in spiritual life, you can't artificially do anything. That's how Krishna helps us. You know, sometimes he'll give you a glimpse. As I said, you're the only person. Sometimes he puts you in the spot, you're the only person, you're not quite qualified, and you end up doing something. He empowers you to do something that some wonderful devotee would do, like that. And you get a glimpse. You think, I would like to be like that all the time. So, you know, he'll give you a little glimpse. But otherwise, you know, we're performing devotional activities and, you know, he's not going to manifest these, you know, results beyond our level of surrender and purity. Okay. So in that way, he's helping us. Krishna's helping us. And when we see that, and we want to advance, then we can look and, you know, we can perceive that, for instance, we might say, so you're speaking to someone and someone says, Narayan is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And you think, what do I say to that? Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, no, you know, Madhvacharya, he says that Narayan is supreme. I'll show you the and you think, oh, you know, I'm baffled. So then, you know, in that circumstance, you think, I really have to go through Prabhupada's books a little bit more. You know. That's exactly right. So one time, to just further add to that, So the Prabhupada was talking with one of the disciples, and he said, well, a few of the disciples, he says, what is the most important verse in the Vedic literatures? If I ask. Prabhupada said, you know, what is the most important verse in the Vedic literatures? What did you say? What's that? Now, the devotees threw all these at Prabhupada. Any others? I had that conversation with you. I was wondering who I had that conversation with. I'm glad you didn't. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, thanks for that. The most important verse is say the Vande Gurun. No, Yasya Deve Tata Devo Tata Deve Tishati the Gita Yata Prakashanti Mahatmanaha. There's a couple of words I left out there, but the translation: unto those devotees who have implicit faith in both the spiritual master and the supreme personality of Godhead, all the imports of the Vedic knowledge is automatically revealed. So that is the answer that Prabhupada, you know, considers is the essence. If we want to, you know, advance in our to be, you know, fully Krishna conscious, and by being fully Krishna conscious to help others, that is the most important verse in all the Vedic literatures. That if we have faith in the Guru and Krishna, it will happen. And therefore, there's that verse: Mukam kadoti vachilam pankum langa te girim yakripatam mahambande. What's that? Sri Gurum Dindatanam. That, you know, by the grace of the spiritual master, a lame person can cross mountains. And a blind person can see the stars in the sky. And a great fool can speak eloquent truths poetically. That is, you know, by the mercy of the Guru. So, really, that's all it takes. Is, you know, if that is there, everything else follows automatically. And it says there, automatically. Without separate endeavor. You have faith in the Guru. So, you see, you know, in, if you look at devotees like Jalpataka Maharaj and, you know, devotees like that, you know, Prabhupada said, go and sell books. You know, they went and sold books. Opposite, you know, clean the temple, they cleaned the temple. Do some managing, they did some managing. They didn't think, you know, oh, I'm so busy doing all this, you know, for Prabhupada that, you know, I want to develop all these skills as a kirtani and, study the books more and do this and, you know, do so many things. They actually did just exactly what Prabhupada asked them. Everything else they put aside, and automatically they matured into devotees who, you know, Krishna revealed all abilities, all realizations. They do all those things, you know, by, you know, bowing down their head. Prabhupada said, bow your head. You know, you think, oh, bow my head, but, you know, how's that going to make me a great qualified preacher? But Prabhupada understands. The Guru says bow the head, you bow the head, touch the floor. By Krishna's grace, everything is automatically done. You become, you know, a qualified devotee in every respect. Krishna says, you know, sweep the courtyard, distribute books, do some management, do this, you know, and that manner. So that's the secret. Does that answer the question?
Actually, we acquire transcendental knowledge. This is still based on the proof of the spiritual
Yeah, it's you know, if we're making the endeavor, then Krishna will give the results of that. You know. Not that, you know, if we think so, I'm trying to be sincere, so Krishna will send Guru. I'll just sit at home, stay on the couch, you know, like this. So we make some endeavor, and Krishna reciprocates with that endeavor. But the endeavor without Krishna reciprocating in itself will not do. You know, we have to use our intelligence, and you know, for instance, you know, if you want to get an education in, say you're studying, you know, architecture, you know, you want to build bridges, and you know, not everyone can build a bridge, especially one that stays up and stays up for a couple of hundred years. But there are people in this world who sort of know that. So, you know, you sort of have to search that person out. You know, you have to use your intelligence that, yes, you know, what are this person's credentials like that. So, you know, that endeavor is there. The same with the spiritual master. You know, you sort of put the endeavor in because, you know, you're... you know, it's not that the person, you know, who's building the bridges thinks, you know, that just one day, you know, the perfect person for me to pass on my knowledge would just I'll walk downstairs and, you know, they'll be just sitting on the stairs, you know. The student has to search out that person. But the spiritual masters, they're very, very merciful, is that they're making themselves available. You know, in 12 years, Prabhupada circumambulated, you know, circled the globe 10 times. So that, you know, if there is someone who's, you know, seeking for a spiritual master, Prabhupada made himself available, and the Guru made himself available, and Krishna made himself available. But even if Prabhupada goes there and a person is not making the endeavor, then the Guru will be gone. You see? So the person has to be making the endeavor as well. The Guru is, you know, traveling, and then the person, so then they'll connect. But, you know, how many people when Prabhupada came here just, you know, didn't even bother to go to the town hall and listen to him? They were not making an endeavor to see Guru, so therefore, even though the Guru came, anyone who had a little interest in, you know, maybe I can get some spiritual teaching from this Guru personality, they made some endeavor, they went to the temple, they, you know, the temple, you know, so that connection both is there. Therefore, Krishna is helping. He's sending he's bringing people from the spiritual world and sending them around the world. Krishna is helping. Guru is doing so much work. But if we're not making an endeavor, despite all of that, like, you know, who is the ultimate guru? Krishna. Here, you know, there's the Bhagavad Gita. You can purchase it in the shops, you know, for $10, $15, and read it. And they will describe in there that you should read this in association of devotees. And who is approaching Krishna as a guru by, you know, purchasing the book, taking it home and reading? Bhagavad Gita is all over the world, but if they're not putting some endeavour in, then the Bhagavad Gita is everywhere, but it will have no value to them. So both. Mm. Very practical. No, it's just very practical. Mm. So we'll just leave it there. Give you hungry looks. Thank you.